Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show! Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Joining me this week, two of our Anime News Network staff critics. It's Theron Martin.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on, Theron.
Pleased to meet you.
And, what? We've talked before.
Well.
Oh, you mean the audience. Okay. and I kind of want to run down Fall and see what you guys thought. I guess, starting with Theron, what's your impression overall of Fall 2012?
Well, one thing that I noticed that I thought was very interesting is that the fall season seemed to have a little higher percentage of shows specifically targeted at the female audience than normal.
Right.
I'm looking at Akatsu right now on my screen. That's oriented towards more of a younger female audience. But then you also have some of the true like shoujo romance series like the Kami-sama Kiss, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And you got Say I Love You and, My Little Monster. So there's a pretty good amount of specifically female-targeted shows. And then a lot of the other shows that aren't what I would say specifically female-targeted are still pretty heavy on the pretty boy content. Mm-hmm. So I just found it kind of curious that there's such a focus this particular season on the female audience.
Is it a focus or is it just a little bit more balanced? Because if you have six of one and two of the other, and then suddenly you have four of one and six of the other, that's closer to a balance than it is like more focus on a female audience, I would say.
Well, that might be a better term to use. Perhaps what I was getting at is the focus finally put things more in balance.
Right. And it's also much more noticeable. Like, when you watch as much stuff as you guys do, you tend to actually know trends. you're literally watching almost every piece of animation that airs on Japanese television in a calendar year, so you much more easily pick up trends like that. But quality-wise, how'd you feel about the whole thing?
Well, I didn't feel there was a particularly big number of truly top-rate quality shows, but I thought there wasn't much at the bottom end of the scale either. So the overall was I would say it's kind of been on the pretty good side so far.
Right. What were the highlights for you?
The first episode I was most impressed with was, surprisingly, Say I Love You. Apparently I liked that one a lot more than a lot of people did, but for some reason that one just totally and completely clicked with me. And again, I'm not normally a terribly big fan of shoujo romances, but that one worked.
Right. Yeah, I noticed that you rarely ever give out a five. So
yeah, maybe about once a season, maybe, and that was my one for this season.
Right. Yeah. And anything that you're sort of our resident fan service appreciator. So was there anything on that end that really stuck out to you this time as like it seems of particular quality in that genre?
Well, To Love Rue Darkness will probably get there eventually. The problem with that right now is both the streamed versions and anything that you find fans on for right now is all of the censored versions. And that's one of those series that you really can't appreciate in censored form. So eventually, once the uncensored versions of that come out, that will probably be like the fan service highlight of the season, because everything I've heard about the manga on that says that the manga goes even racier than what the series has been before. So
yeah, it's like I don't particularly like those shows, and I know To Love Rue is like one of the shining examples of like this show is just about tits and that's it. The censored version really doesn't serve any purpose. I don't even know who that's for. Like, I guess they just have to get it on TV to let people know it exists, so that when the DVDs come out or the Blu-rays come out, people can buy them. But man, what is the point? Like, you're seeing like 25% of the actual show. There's so much censoring.
And the other thing, too, is it even came out in censored form on ATX, the pay cable channel in Japan. And there were a lot of Japanese fans that were not happy about that at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I read about that. That's kind of ridiculous. But I guess the show is even more over the top than typical.
Well, basically, I haven't actually read the manga, but from what I've heard about the manga, it basically takes the whole, there's kind of a harem collecting around the male lead concept, and actually has one of the girls in the harem decide, oh, I'm not just content with all the girls that's playing up to the male lead. We're actually going to make a harem for him, since he's going to be like almost literally the king of the universe one day. Mm-hmm. So let's get an actual harem going for him.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I kind of figured that'd be your reaction.
Sounds.
At least it's different.
Sure.
It's an odd angle on it, so I'm curious to see how it goes. But again, it's already shown signs that it's going to be one of these deals where if you don't care for the fan service, there's no point in watching it.
Well, you know, I'm not the audience for that show. It's not really a huge surprise. But yeah, okay. So, I mean, anything else that you would recommend that you're sticking with? I mean, you're obviously, at this point, you're watching episode 3 and 4. What are you still watching, aside from the obvious stuff that, you know, you gave really high marks to? Like, what are you still watching, and give us your thoughts on how things are going.
I'm kind of a little undecided on that. The things I know for absolute certain I'm still going to be watching are a couple of carryovers from last season.
Right.
I'm a big Sword Art Online fan, and I'm still sticking with Total Eclipse for reasons I'm really not sure why, but I'm still watching it anyways.
Yeah.
So those two are carrying over from last season. The most likely candidates for me watching out this season, I'm almost certainly going to be following From the New World. I think I've already seen episode 3 of that. I think that's going into some really interestingly weird directions. And the other one I think I'm going to follow for certain is, I'm not sure the exact full title, but it's Chunibyo something something something.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one with the girl with the eye patch in it.
Right.
And that was one that we didn't get to do a preview on because the anime network ran into some little issues there. But I've seen now the first 3 episodes of it, and it is probably the funniest thing that's come out this year. It is a total riot.
Okay, what is that about?
Basically, it's about this newly minted high school student who, back when he was in middle school, kind of went off the deep end into his fantasy world and is now so seriously regretting it that he moved to as far away as possible to go to school so that nobody from his previous school would know him. Problem is, he runs into a girl who just happens to live above him, who's at the exact stage that he was a year ago. And he kind of ends up falling in with her kind of unwillingly. And basically, a lot of what's been going on so far is that she's just off the rocker nuts, in a living in her fantasy world kind of sense. And he's just horribly embarrassed because a lot of the stuff that she's doing was stuff that he used to do and is trying desperately to forget about. And the problem for him has been that just about everybody he's been encountering has kind of been getting dragged into this whole fantasy world business too. One example of the kind of thing that they do here that I thought was particularly clever, there's situations where she gets into, this girl with the eye patch who I'm talking about here, gets into fights with like her sister and things like this, and we get to see this grand fantasy view of them using these very elaborate like sci-fi weapons and stuff like this to duel each other, just like you would see in these really hyped up action shows. But then it will then flash to what's really going on and show them like dueling with like broomsticks or something like that. And the contrast of it is just funny as hell.
Well, sounds like it has some promise.
I think it does.
Clearly.
I've also got little lights too, which are like these short, like 4 or 5 minute mini episodes that they're actually streaming in between the main episodes. And those things are quite funny on their own. But I've also never seen a series do that, like while the series was actually running. So,
Anything else?
Oh, there's a couple other ones that I'm at least considering. I'm still debating about following out Say I Love You because, again, it's been such a good series, but just not really my style series. I'm kind of on the fence about Blast of Tempest right now because that's just such a good-looking series. Mm. And there's one or two other ones. Like I might watch a little bit more of Ixion Saga because that was just so stupid. Much stupid fun the first episode, but I don't know. We'll see what else catches my attention when as I watch a couple more episode twos and episode threes. But I'm just not entirely settled on my list yet.
So Rebecca, that's you then. What's your overall takeaway?
Well, I felt that this was a really uneven season in a lot of ways. I agree that there were more female-oriented shows, so I think I would tend towards the it's evening out rather than it was a it was more targeted towards women. But I felt like there was nothing that really stood out to me. Everything seemed to fall into just a couple of different genre categories, and some were better done than others. But actually, the most unusual thing I thought was probably Aikatsu, with the girls go from being in traditional animation to being 3D models all of a sudden when they go through their idol transformations. I hadn't seen anything quite so abrupt as that before, and I thought that was pretty interesting. The show is clearly just half hours of a toy commercial, but that's another issue. But I think there were a lot of sort of dark action shows or action shows that were attempting to be dark. Mm-hmm. More than I think I've seen it once before, although I could be making that up. But you have Psycho Pass and Codebreaker. K.
Right.
I think From the New World maybe has that potential. So it felt like that was sort of the theme du jour of this season.
I think you could probably throw Blast of Tempest in there,
and
too.
And Blast of Tempest, that's right. I knew there was one more I was forgetting. They're just a very dark color palette for a lot of them as well. Two guys doing action-y things, except with K, of course, where there felt like there were 400 guys doing action-y things. So that was my overall impression.
Yeah, I think I noticed that too. It definitely seems like the general mood of a lot of these shows is a little bit more melancholy than we get. I feel like in previous seasons it's been a lot more comedy.
Yes, I would agree. And even the shoujo shows had a slightly darker edge with a couple of them. I Say I Love You definitely felt more melancholy than some of the others. And actually, even My Little Monster has some potential to go down a darker path. It's not going to, but it's there in the backstory.
Okay, so what were the highlights and for you? Like anything that you're definitely going to continue watching?
Well, I'm mildly ashamed to admit that I will keep watching Ixion Saga D&D. Apparently, I have the sense of humor of an 8-year-old, but that just really tickles me. It was those boots, I think. I don't know.
Yes, the boots are classics.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain I have seen those on one of my niece's Monster High dolls, but never put to quite. Not quite a highlight, but I was pleased to see Hirono Kakera actually get a plot. Mm-hmm. That made me feel better about the whole thing. Right. Oh, that's sort of faint praise, though, isn't it?
Yeah, you might say, yeah.
Yeah. I like where Blast of Tempest is going. I like what it's doing with Shakespeare. I teach English. It's sort of required that I like Shakespeare, I guess. But the combination of the plays I thought was very interesting. I don't know if I'm going to keep following it, but it's something that I'm definitely considering. I like Theron. I'm carrying over Sword Art Online because I really enjoy it. And what's it called? Total Eclipse, for reasons I really am not sure about. I think at this point I'm like a spectator to traffic accident watching that show. I just can't look away.
You know, that's about the exact same impression I have on it.
Yeah, there's just something about it. I'm going to keep watching My Little Monster. I think that's a fun take on that particular shoujo trope. My problem with Say I Love You and a lot of that kind of show is that it's the girl just sort of sitting there waiting for Prince Charming, like she's been poisoned by some kind of fairy tale. And there he comes, riding in on his metaphorical white horse and makes everything better. And maybe that's just because I'm female or because I know a lot about fairy tales or what, but I just dislike that trope. I agree it looked good, though. Well, let's see. I'm still watching Psycho Pass. That's another. I'm not entirely sure why. I like the concept. I'm not sure I'm enjoying the incredibly dark color palette. Something about the character designs, the eyes, really bother me. Couldn't tell you what, but they're just off. And I'm watching Kamisama Kiss just because I'm a huge fan of the manga, and I want to see how they're going to give everybody their voices.
Right. So, any particular lowlights? Was there anything that you just said, like, nope, this is the worst?
Oh, yes. There were three, actually. I really disliked Girls on Panzer. That was my pre-reading up because it was a terrible rant. I didn't like it. I found the whole tank concept to be contrived and silly, and I hated the way they were bullying her into driving a tank when she didn't want to. But I did find the concept that tanks improve femininity kind of fascinating, since it's a big old phallic symbol, but, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. go Japan. Mm-hmm. And I really dislike the pet girl of Sakuraso. That just, yeah. her total ineptitude annoyed me. And like, I think it was Bamboo who said it, I felt like we were supposed to be laughing at someone who was somehow mentally disabled. That didn't sit well with me.
Yeah, I really enjoyed watching the people vigorously defend the show as some kind of heartfelt and realistic look at what it's like to take care of an autistic person. It's like,
yeah.
No. No.
I don't think so.
You're seeing things that are not there. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was pretty much fan-pandering. Oh, take care of your own pet girl.
Yeah, it's a fantasy. That's it. Nothing yeah. else. Do it. Yeah, I don't know. I got through about half that episode and said, nope. Not going to bother. In fact, like, yeah, that happened a few times where I watched more than I preview. I always watch more than I actually write about. But this time, I don't know if just I'm at the point now where it's, like, seriously, it just nothing bothers me anymore, or they're kind of they're spinning their wheels a little bit with this fan service stuff, and there's not too much further they can go and still be on television at this point. That's kind of what it seems like. Like, the shock value otaku comedies, they can't go much further than they're already going without getting in trouble with whatever the Japanese broadcast authority is. At least that's kind of what it feels like. But that actually leads into a larger discussion that I wanted to have with you guys now that we're on the other side of fall 2012. I'm curious, looking back at this year, you guys have been anime fans for a long time, you're paid to write about it. How do you feel about it as an entertainment medium? Much in the same way as you would look back on a year's worth of film and say, this year in cinema, what did it say about the state of cinema? How do you feel about the state of anime right now, just as an entertainment product? And I guess, Theron, if you have thoughts on that, sort of expand on that.
Well, honestly, I have not really felt that there was being that much of a statement made this year, one way or the other, on that issue. Most of what I think we've seen so far this season, I mean, this year, has pretty much been par for the course stuff. I mean, you were mentioning a couple minutes ago about how the fan service is pretty much reached the limit of what it can do, and I to an extent, I do agree with you on that. But there's also the consideration too that some of the most salacious shows that have ever aired already haven't even been on this season. You still got things like Seikon no Quasar lurking out there that actually finally got licensed, and I never would have thought it was going to. And that one goes about as far as anything does. It goes farther than anything that's been put out this season. So, yeah, I mean they've pretty much reached the upper limit, but I think they kind of did that a year or two ago, honestly. As far as other things, I guess the one kind of disturbing trend I see is this whole Emoto business, the whole little sister kind of incest vibe thing. I mean, this has existed for years in an underground sense, and things like your like doujinshi and your hentai games and stuff like that. But now over the last year or two, it's been creeping more and more into the actual anime production. And if there's one genre that I kind of have a problem with, it's that. I mean, they're playing too many, not only playing games with it, it's like saying, oh, they're really just cousins or instead of that, stuff like that. But you actually have series like Oni-Ai, where they outright are brother and sister, at least as far as I know. So, and there's just, I think there's just too much of that. And that's a trend I really wish would end, but I'm afraid it's not going to. So,
well, you know, on that front, that's an interesting observation. Yeah, obviously, we've seen a lot more incest fetish shows. God, I hate having to say that out loud. We've seen a lot more of those, but it seems like it's just that time for that to be popular. Don't we sort of rotate through fetishes like every year or so? Like every couple of years, maybe year, every 2 years, there's a new thing that's the popular fetish or whatever, and then so all the fan service anime, or a lot of the fan service anime, tends to be focused on that. It feels like, you know, it was cat girls, then it was maids, then it was tsundere girls, then it was twin tails, now it's little sisters. Like, it's always something, you know. And that's not a totally accurate list. Those are all elements that get thrown around a lot, but it does seem like there's sort of a new fetish every couple of years that gets heavily pandered to.
Well, I definitely hope this is a fetish that's just going to be bigly popular for a while here, and then will die off. But again, it's a pretty popular thing in the hardcore otaku community, from what I've heard. So
yeah.
I don't know. I think this one might be around to stay for a while.
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, again, and this stuff tends to just wind up getting shuffled in with all the other tropes, and as much as I dislike that word, all the other tropes and traits of otaku romantic comedies, these kind of all get shuffled together. It's just that right now incest is the thing, so let's focus on that. That's moving units, so you know, lard everything up with incest. But that, you know, yeah, in my opinion, like, looking at the landscape right now, we're seeing a balancing out like we haven't seen in a while. It seems like, you know, you guys both pointed this out, that there's more shows targeted, at least with a general audience, that it's targeted at women. We're getting more of that, and so it's sort of balancing the season out, so it doesn't feel like it's totally dominated by this one thing that every studio decided they can sell. We're getting, okay, here's kind of something for everyone. And I like, to me, that's a great trend. I want there to be something for everyone. As much as people might want to believe that I want all the fan service stuff to go away and die forever, no, it's fine that they make that. People can enjoy what they want to, just so long as they throw us a few bones, those of us that like action and you know, drama, and not that those elements don't show up in other shows, but you know what I'm talking about, the kind of shows, like, even though I didn't really like it, something like a Psycho-Pass, something like that.
Or something like, say, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, sure. Sure, why not? But, Rebecca, I'm curious, how do you feel about, like, looking back at 2012, what would you say about the state of anime right now? How would you say?
Well, I also had noticed the emoto trend. I sort of wondered if maybe it doesn't go back to, as a genre, go back to the fact that the creation gods of the Shinto religion were twins. Or at least siblings. I've read it translated both ways. So that maybe they have some sort of cultural leg to stand on.
I'm not sure. I think you're reaching.
I think I am too, but I like to try sometimes. I think we've seen a bigger market for the niche titles that aren't fan service, that are more Jose. And we had both Chihaya Furu and Utakoi, which I don't know that those would have appeared even 3 years ago or 5 years ago. And there's also been a major increase in reverse harem adaptations.
We had
you know, the Hiro no Kakura and Utapri, and even just getting licensed more recently, Angelique and La Corda, just a ton of them seem to be cropping up. And I thought that shows an interesting trend toward female viewers, certainly, but it's also a specific type of female viewer who likes watching those.
Yeah.
Reamed out for that, I'm sure.
I'm wondering if we're seeing a spike in Fujoshi sales in Japan, and that's why we're getting more of that stuff.
That would make sense.
Because nothing dictates what gets made more than DVD and Blu-ray sales in Japan. Nothing.
Yeah.
And manga sales, probably. But those things are the most important. That dictates what gets made. And so maybe there was a big spike in Fujoshi DVD sales over the last couple of years.
Or video games.
Yeah, or video games. Don't tell me video games, stuff like that, sure. It all depends on the sales projections and how things are going on that front. But if that's the case, then, again, I say, good. More variety. Get more of everything. I don't want to see the entire medium. It's like, oh, there's 10 fan service comedies and one reverse harem and then one serious drama and then that's it. I would prefer to have 401, 4 or the other, two different kinds, you know, give us a little variety in the dozen, you know.
That's absolutely
what I want. And so long as that's what we have, I feel pretty good about where anime is right now. While I do think that we're getting to a place now where it is such structured genre entertainment for the most part that we're not seeing much in the way of real experimentation or breakout like creativity or anything like that. But you know, in a down economy like this, in an entertainment medium, you're not going to see a lot of risk taking on a creative front. So it's sort of silly to expect that. It's kind of like complaining how, oh, everything's superhero movies and sequels in Hollywood. Well, the economy sucks, so you make what works. And the economy's getting better, of course, but you make what sells, just like any business. That's how any business would operate. So they're just trying to keep the lights on. And anime companies are particularly susceptible to the market forces. So you're talking about little companies that are struggling to begin with. They got to put food on the table. But it's nice, I guess, just to see that at least if we're going to get nothing but genre entertainment, there's a vast variety of it. So they're trying to fill every hole. They're trying to make everyone happy instead of just this one audience or that other audience. So I appreciate that. And I have a pretty optimistic outlook on the way things are going right now.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we're seeing that starting to change across a lot of different mediums. I've noticed, for example, that there are fewer paranormal romances floating around the bookstores, such as since vampires come back when the economy's bad in terms of popularity. That's probably a good sign.
Yeah, well, you know, and again, those trends, they run their course.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if we're already seeing the next young adult fad come up through the ranks. You probably know much more about that than I do, but yeah, everything sort of rotates. So, yeah, I don't know. If we're just going to get genre stuff, at least we're getting a large variety of it. And, you know, I enjoyed plenty of the even the basic shonen stuff. Like, you know, say what you will about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, I'm happy that that's coming out so I can at least enjoy that story because the manga just seems impenetrable to me. Like, there's just too much of it. So, I've always been curious about that. I'm really happy that that show's being made. I wish it were being streamed somewhere legally, but I'm happy that the show's being made. I even really enjoyed Magi, or however you pronounce it. I thought that was cute. I thought it was entertaining. I mean, it wasn't anything special, but it was cute and entertaining, so I'll take it, you know? That's fine. Of course, I always want to see more experimentation and more, like, hey, here's this thing that you can only get at anime. Like, this is the only place you will find, like, sort of an artistic animated film aimed at adults. You know, you really don't get that in America at all. Sure, of course I want more of that. But, again, silly to expect it at this point. Like, you just got to manage your expectations and make sure they line up with reality, I think. I don't know.
I'd say you're probably right. You've pretty much said it, so yes.
All right, yeah, I mean, I think it's a good time to be, probably a pretty good time to be an anime fan, just because no matter what your taste, it's going to be something new that you can probably get into.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, it's going to be a new show.
I'm sure you're a Yuri fan, maybe.
Yeah, sure, there you go. There's not a lot of that floating around. But, I don't know. I think overall we're in a pretty good spot. I'm hoping that Fortune's... change sometime in the future. And as always, as we always say, I'm really hoping that there's some kind of a breakout hit, like a mainstream breakout crossover. Everyone loves it. It's on TV in America. It's the DVDs come out, you know, and people actually buy it, and they see merchandise for it. You know, the Full Metal Alchemist or Death Note, something like that. We always want one of those, and God, we haven't had one in forever, but those are really, really rare. So, you know, we don't have one right now. I hope that one is on the horizon.
Maybe the Sailor Moon remake when that eventually comes out.
Maybe, yeah, who knows? If we wind up just going down the remake train, you know, great. That's fine. Totally.
Well, on that issue, honestly, I wouldn't be terribly surprised if you wouldn't eventually see somebody try to go that direction with Sword Art online, because that one's got a lot more crossover value to more of a general audience than I think most of the titles that have come out this year do. It's not just an anime title. I think you could actually get like your gamer population into something like that too.
Do you think so?
I think
because
you're right.
All I've heard now, this is I dropped Sword Art Online. I watched like two episodes of it and then said, I'll wait for the DVDs or whatever. So I decided not to watch that, but I know it is like the most talked about show right now. So that's like the breakout hit among anime and among existing anime fans. But when it comes to that show, I've heard nothing but this show started out with a neat premise and then they just larded it up with otaku tropes. Is that accurate, or is it more than that? I mean, that's all I've heard. I don't know. I'm not making that judgment call myself, but that is certainly the chatter. That's what I've heard.
I wouldn't really exactly agree with that. There have definitely been complaints about the show, primarily because the writing on it is not the greatest, and it's based on a first novel by an author who is apparently admitted that wasn't his best effort.
Yeah.
It's definitely an incredibly popular show. It's the most popular show this new series this year, I think, would be without question. It is by a mile the most discussed show I think we've ever had in our forums. If you look at a per post per episode ratio, it blows everything. I mean, everything in the last 6 or 7 years out of the water.
Right.
There's not even Melancholy of Rui Suzumiya, while it was airing, had as many posts per episode, even close to as many posts per episode as this one did. So it's definitely got people's attention. I think part of it's because it deals with a lot of game mechanics and how they could apply it in like a life or death situation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what fascinates a lot of people about it. Things like how do player killers, PKs, work in a setting like this, where people getting killed in the game really does mean, or as far as anybody knows, does mean death in real life. But yet you still have some of that, those kind of concerns. How do you deal with things like boss battles where people can very easily die? I mean, and if they die in the boss battle, they're dead for good. So they've got all sorts of things, issues like this that they're raising. Now, there have been some complaints about, and one I hate the most, is that, the main character is a Gary Stu type and all this, and I cannot tell you how tired I am of hearing that one, but there are definitely some elements that people are pandering to otaku audiences, but I think a lot of it's highly debatable. I mean, what is and is not a problem, what is and is not a plot hole in the story. There's an awful lot of things worth talking about in the series, and I think that's part of the reason why it's got so much attention. It has two characters that actually got married within the series, and that's certainly, I'm told that actually caused a huge spike in DVD pre-orders in Japan when that episode aired. So there's a lot of stuff that's to draw people's interest. There's a lot of people complaining, but even a lot of people are complaining are still watching it. So
yeah, well, that's kind of what you want. You want a show that gets people talking, actually engages the audience, makes them think, makes them want to talk about the show. That's kind of the best. when you can actually produce something like that. So that's nice to hear. Yeah, I guess, in my experience reading about it, it's just nonstop people complaining about the female character or whatever, the relationship between the lead male and the lead female character.
Oh, that's what I'm sick of hearing.
Yeah, which I guess is tiresome. Would you agree with what Theron said, Rebecca?
I would, actually. I think that got a lot of appeal to people who play RPGs or MMORPGs simply because at some point, if you think that we're playing those games because we don't like this particular world, or it would just be fun to step out of it for a minute, but what if you actually did? You know, the stakes were much higher.
And
you couldn't come back. And if you die in the game, you're dead, and you have to learn all those boring skills that you don't really want to do because you'd rather be killing monsters, because otherwise you don't survive. And to me, that's what's interesting about the show. And I do think that if it got a television release or it just got a wider DVD distribution than it's likely to get, that it could draw in people who are not traditional anime watchers. And I think that it really does have the potential to do that if it's handled the right way.
Well, I think that's an Aniplex title, so I think that's a negatory on the DVD, widely available
I know.
DVD sales.
I'm not too happy about that fact, but then again, I wasn't too happy that they had Fate Zero either. That's one I would have loved to have owned on DVD, but not nowhere near at the price that they're asking for it. So,
wait,
I'm with you on that.
Are you saying it's not $800 good?
No, it's not. It's good. I mean, it's good, but there's nothing. There's no anime series I'd pay $800 for.
Yeah, me either. All right. Well, I'm happy to hear that we all sort of have a generally positive outlook, and it'll be interesting to see what Sword Art Online does if it does wind up on TV here or something. I just in my gut when I think about that show, I don't see it becoming any kind of a crossover success. I don't see anyone marketing it at the right audience. You know, you're right in that. You know, you could be right in that it could appeal to gamers and people who don't normally watch anime, but you have to have marketing for that. And nah, I don't see it happening for that show. But, anyway. Maybe I'm wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong. And it becomes a gigantic smash hit. Okay. Outside of the usual anime fan circles. Anyway, let's go ahead and get to Twitter. We got a bunch of Twitter questions here. Okay. Ed Sizemore, your friend of mine, asks... I think we got a couple questions from Ed here. What is the purpose of anime shows where the shows are under 5 minutes each? When are they shown on Japanese TV? Those are typically late night, I think, and they're run in between other shows, right?
I think so, just little filler things.
Yeah, they're little sort of just filling in time, I guess maybe when they didn't sell ad space or something like that. I'm not 100% certain on my answer on that, but in terms of what purpose they serve, mostly it's to irritate me during the preview guide, because I have a real hard time thinking that a review of a 3-minute thing is a total waste of time. It will take you more time to read the review than to just watch it.
Probably true.
So that's why I make you guys lump them all together, because it's like, what is the point of writing 300 words on something where reading those 300 words is going to take longer?
Well, the other possibility on some of these shorter ones is that some of these could well be being made to serve as kind of a test run to see if the series is worth a full length episodes. Because I know they did something like that with Nyarko-san back in the spring. They had that came out as a full series in the spring, but for like about a year before that, they've been running these like 3 and 5 minute shorts online to kind of, I ultimately think was pretty much an advertisement to see if there's enough interest for the full series.
I think that happens every now and again, but I think that might be the exception to the rule, because rarely do you see one of those little 5 minute shows get blown up into a full show.
But they could also be advertisements for a manga, TQ. I think the manga's ongoing, so that could be, you're watching this, now you should go read the book.
Sure, why not? Probably serve a variety of functions. I never watch those. I don't see the point in watching something that's 5 minutes long. Unless it's like a short film. But like a series? I don't know. Okay. Say that again. Kaiden1364 asks, do you base the quality of an anime season or year on the presence of a few excellent shows or on a breadth of variety and creativity? That's a good question. So, you know, how? What's your general judgment system? Are you saying, like, well, there were three great shows, so this was a great year, or there was a whole bunch of good stuff, or at least there were a lot of different kinds of things, and that's better, I guess, is sort of what he's asking?
I've done it both ways.
Right.
I tend to look mostly at, like, the overall ratings. Like, am I consistently getting high ratings to things this season, or are there very few low points? But there's been a couple of seasons I can think of where it's pretty much come down to the fact that there were three or four shows that just really stood out, and that's what made it a great season for me.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the way that I would look at it as well.
Yeah. I have to admit, like, I tend to just focus on, like, well, what did I really like? What were the standout titles that made me at least want to watch more, or made me think, like, oh, this is a pretty good year for anime because we had this, 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 and this, and I really liked all of those. So maybe that's a little bit more myopic than I should be, but, you know, that's kind of how I tend to look at it, I guess. So long as you're getting a lot of different kinds of things made and everyone's getting what they want, it's fine with me. That's the best. Okay. GW Otaku asks, in terms of anime as an entertainment product, state of anime films in Japan in terms of both quality and state of the industry stuff. So, animated films, or anime movies, as it were. We don't get that many, the outside of the Shonen Jump movie merry-go-round. There haven't been that many this year, I don't think. We've had a few, but the ones that did come out this year are super promising. So, like, Letters to Momo from Production IG, the Wolf Children thing that Funimation's putting out, the new Mamoru Hosoda movie, those Madoka recap movies I don't know about. I'm supposed to be seeing them here in a day or two. But, yeah, we don't get that many, and I wish we got more, and I wish that was where experimentation were happening, more so than in any other medium, but getting funding for an animated movie these days is extremely difficult, at least from what I've been told. So, I think we're gonna see the same pace in terms of release schedule for anime films for a while. You know, you're going to get five or six a year. Maybe one or two of them will be notable efforts from big name directors like Hosoda and somewhat like that. But there's never been like this huge flood of anime films where you just don't know how to sift through them all. It's always been a pretty limited number.
Well, as far as what gets released in Japan, I think you're right.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
What actually makes it to the United States? Well, last year there was a huge number of anime movies that made it to the United States for the first time. I mean, there's like the most I think I can ever remember there being coming out all in one year. But this year, yeah, there's been way, way, way less than that this year.
Yeah,
this year coming over here, there were very few.
That's true. But that could change next year. Maybe we'll get more. I think with Wolf Children and if someone picks it up, Letters to Momo, those two, 1-2 together, will probably feel like, oh, hey, suddenly we're getting a bunch of films. At least that's what it'll feel like, even though it's only a couple.
Well, there's also some other stuff flowing out there, too, like The Princess and the Pilot, or there's a couple of different names for that one, but I know I've seen that one flowing around, too, so there's a couple of other ones out there as well. Oh, and the third MARDOK Scramble movie, I think I think that's due out this fall yet. So there's at least a couple others flowing out there that might eventually be of interest, too.
ABCB Tom asks, is there a future in streaming for classic titles? Crunchyroll picked up Mayashimon, but it's gotten fewer viewers than that Ixion Saga DT thing did in a few hours. Is Discotheque our only hope? Well, in terms of streaming classic titles, I'm not sure Discotheque is in that business. And maybe he means getting released at all for American viewers. We had Sam Pinansky on talking about his potential idea for a kind of a Kickstarter streaming for anime that would be classic shows where you raise enough money and they can stream it, you raise more money, they can release it on DVD, that kind of thing. He hasn't gotten that quite off the ground yet, but from what I understand, he's still very much working on it. We'll probably have him back on this show to talk about it some more in the coming months. But that something like that, I think, is your best bet. People don't invest in classic anime in terms of, like, hey, we're going to make a whole bunch of money streaming ancient giant robot shows and whatnot. So, you know, just in terms of an investment, no one really is investing in classic anime. So cross your fingers that Sam gets his project off the ground and gets it launched, because I think that's your best hope at this point. And there's also Viki, which is streaming some classic stuff, so you can go there, and they seem to be taking a chance on that stuff. But I'm pretty sure they're getting sweetheart deals on a lot of that stuff. I mean, at this point, they're streaming Onisama A and Rose of Versailles and stuff like that. So, you know, that's your best bet. Like, you need classic anime, go to Viki. Now that I remembered Viki. Again, from Ed Sizemore, he says, I like to think that there's a U.S. audience for Space Brothers. Any chance that that is actually a reality? Could a show about the Japanese space program attract viewers outside anime fans?
I'd like to see it attract such an audience. That's a series I actually haven't watched out. I've only seen 2 or 3 episodes of it. It looked like a neat series, but I just don't see that one as having any crossover potential, really.
Yeah, me either. I would like to think that it does, but I'm not sure that it really could make it here.
Yeah, I think that's not based in reality. That show, I don't know. No. As it is, stuff about the space programs, even in America, the space like TV shows and movies about the space program are generally appreciated by a particular, not particularly huge audience, as it is. So, a show about a Japanese space program, I don't know about that. Also from Ed, he asks, any shows in the last 2 years that you think should be on US TV? Well, the obvious answer is Tiger and Bunny, which is sort of on TV if you have a PlayStation 3 and pay Viz $6, $7 a month to stream a cable channel, linear cable channel. Though that's kind of, it's about as far from actually being on TV as you can while still being technically on TV. Tiger and Bunny comes to mind. I don't know. That's the only one that I think actually has mainstream potential. But I don't know. Anything come to mind, either of you? Rebecca?
Well, we did mention Sword Art Online.
Right. Okay,
I think that could. Actually, I think Codebreaker might be able to pull something off, just because shonen shows seem to have more crossover appeal than some others.
Right.
So, I don't know. One wasn't terrific.
Right. Theron?
Off the top of my head, I'm not really thinking of anything else in particular. I suppose I could probably see Blue Exorcist, maybe.
Yeah.
Although, honestly, some of the naming conventions they use in that might make some people a little nervous.
It's a little Satan-y, yeah.
Yeah, I still remember the blowback over some of the Sailor Moon stuff, so.
Yeah.
Probably best not to go there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Bigger Than Anime asks, what shows are you really disappointed about not getting a simulcast? Obviously, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. I'm disappointed when anything doesn't get simulcast. I want everything to be simulcast, but I don't know, that's just me. Did anything particularly stand out that you wound up having to watch a fan sub for that you really wished, I wish this were simulcasting?
If we eliminate the ones that weren't simulcast on time.
Okay.
I can't really think of anything. But that brings up a point that I forgot to mention earlier. One thing I did notice that was a big, big trend this season is titles that were being quote-unquote simulcast, but not at the same time that they were being shown in Japan.
Right.
There was a lot of stuff this year that got simulcast like on a 2 or 3 day delay. And that's just not been the norm prior to this season. I thought that was a very interesting development.
You're right.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I think what we're seeing is a scaling back of the attempt to do day-and-date simulcasting because it's so difficult. It's so time-consuming, it costs a lot of money, and it takes people forever to do it. I know it's a giant crush of horribly hard work for everyone involved, for the small, small number of people involved in it. And it's a huge pain in the ass for the Japanese studios to have to get the materials to us on time. So I would argue that what we're seeing is more of a correction in how that's being done, that's more realistic in terms of the amount of work required to actually produce it, which is, you know, that kind of sucks because for us especially, we want the stuff the minute it airs. Like, we want it simulcasting the minute it airs so we can get it up on the preview guide. But yeah, it's a little bit of a letdown, but I mean, I understand that that's just the reality of how things.
I think it's a little too bad that JoJo's Bizarre Adventure didn't get a simulcast. Yeah. I thought that show was a lot of fun. I think that would have been a good one for somebody.
I'm kind of surprised it didn't, given that Lupin the Third did get its simulcast eventually. So we may still see that come down the road.
Yeah, who knows?
That's true.
Toriko is the same way. All right, Chart Knight asks, if JoJo's Bizarre Adventure succeeds, would it be a good thing to remake old anime, or would it just be a question continued, another way to scrape the barrel just with older material? I mean, to me, something like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, like, that's the perfect thing to remake, because there's so much of it that introducing it to a new audience, or people like me who have always been curious but just never really had an entry point, to me, that's great. Like, I want them to do more of that. I would love it if they would go back and remake, you know, some of the older shows that are these sort of legendary long titles that everyone loved back in the 80s and the 90s that ran forever and ever. But, you know, it's 200 episodes of something from 1981. It's a little inaccessible. Let's remake that. Sure, I would love to see that. Like, remake Ashita no Joe. Just do it. Like, I'll watch it. You know, stuff like that. I'm all for that. I don't know if that's the path to money, but I would love to see more of it. What do you guys think, Rebecca?
Well, I think it would depend on the show. Like, I would hate to see someone remake something like Nos Angel Lyrica. But again, some of the really older stuff, I think, could be updated. They animated for the first time Irezora na Kiss a few seasons ago. And they did things like they added in cell phones, but I thought that was a good way to introduce people to an older story that at that point wasn't available to the majority of the English speaking audience, but there were fan subs, so people could find that. But something that was sort of, well, I don't want to use the word sacred in the minds of the viewers, but similar to that, I think it would be a risk.
Yeah, I think it works for some, but not for others. Like, obviously, you can't just go through and remake everything. Super long running shows that are based on like super long running manga or whatever. Sure, I don't see a problem with that. I think that totally should happen. Theron, any take on that?
I think we've seen some of this done over time, where they made like updated versions of older series, but some of the times that they've done that, they've taken an older title and did a dramatic new twist on it, and those are the ones that I tend to find the most interesting. Although it's hardly one of my favorite shows, the one that most immediately comes to mind on that would be Casher and Sins. I mean, that is a total, complete reimagining of Kasan Robot Hunter from back, what was that, a 70s title or early 80s? Well, it's at least a 30-year-old title,
right?
And it's so dramatically different from what it was before, even though it has basically the same characters and basically the same names and same and somewhat similar associations. And when stuff like that is done, when you've had like this dramatic reinterpretation, those are the remakes that I find most interesting.
Okay. Trick the TM asks, do you think we've reached the worst fetish pandering this year, or are there new lows the industry could reach? Well, you know, we all like to sit around and joke about what the next fetish thing is going to be. It can always get worse, right? I mean, it's foolish to say, no, it'll never be worse than it is now, because of course it can get worse. I don't know, but I don't think we've reached the worst in terms, and, you know, worst is relative, of course, but incest is pretty bad, in my opinion. That's a pretty bad one. So it's kind of hard to think, like, well, what could possibly be showing up in a show that actually airs on television that could be, you know, worse than that? Well, there's, you know, some things come to mind, but I don't think they would make it on TV.
Well, I never would have thought that something like Dance and the Vampire Bun would have flown either, but shit's not made, so.
Hey, whatever. It's keeping the lights on for someone, right? D. Roastblock asks, you took issue with a few of this season's new show's initial attempts at world building. Have you warmed up to subsequent episodes? So I'm pretty critical of first episodes that just insist on this in media res bullshit, where they just drop you in the middle of something and assume that you've read the book or played the game or whatever, and it's not a standalone product. Like, that, it irritates me, and to me it's just like super sloppy writing. It's like, well, we don't have to really tell you what's going on here. We can be as confusing as we want, because if you've played this 40-hour video game, all of this means something to you. I got really irritated at the first episode of Blast of Tempest, because it's like, hey, you've read the manga, remember this, and that, and this, and hey, let's be really confusing, and if you don't already know what's happening, you're gonna be fucking lost, and we're not gonna do anything to try and engage you or make you interested in what's happening. We're just going to assume that showing you these characters doing these things that you've seen before is enough. That really irritates me. You know, speaking as somebody who doesn't necessarily devour a lot of manga or play visual novels, you know, I kind of want my anime to stand on its own. I don't see why it's so difficult to just tell the story from the beginning and let us in right up front and grab us right away, like any TV show should be expected to do, to hook a viewer. I want it to hook me. I don't want it to be like, oh, look at this mysterious puzzle box. I have no idea what's going on. Can't wait to see more. Like, that doesn't intrigue me, but that's a personal taste issue. That's just what I want to see in a first episode of a TV show. I don't know. How do you guys feel about that, Rebecca?
I'm personally more put off by info dumping than just throwing you into the middle of the story. But I do want there to be some set rules about the world established right off.
Right.
And you said Blast of Tempest did not necessarily do that. Psychopass, I thought, did a slightly better job, but still there was just a lot of confusing. I think that the biggest offender this season was Kay, where I just, for the first time, I didn't know what the hell was going on. I had to just go back and say, okay, this is who this is, and this is who that is, and really lay it out for me. And if this is entertainment, I shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah, really, right? I mean, how is that entertaining when you got to sit there and puzzle it out? Who's doing what, and why is this happening? That's, ugh.
Right, that's work, not fun.
Yeah. Theron, got a take on that?
For the most part, I agree with what you were saying, Zach, although I do think there are some series you have to consider on a case-by-case basis on that. For instance, this season, the one that would immediately come to mind is From the New World. If I remember correctly, I don't think that one's based on anything previous. I think that's an entirely original work.
No, From the New World is based on a really famous sci-fi novel.
Oh, it is based on a novel. Okay, well, I know there's a couple of new ones made. I'm just getting confused apparently as to which they were. But in that case, though, there's a lot of a sense of mystery about it. They're basically building the world as they go forward with that. I thought the first episode did a tremendous example of giving you interesting tastes of the world without completely spelling things out, because the series kind of gives the impression that this is one of these ones where the truth of everything is going to get gradually laid out over the course of the series. And From the New World, I thought, has done an excellent job of that so far. They've got these little tidbits that they just kind of throw in there and then just kind of wait to see if you're paying attention. Like in the first episode, they bring up this thing about trickster cats. They're like basically the boogeyman in the story. And then the second episode, if you watch closely, there's like an outline of one of those in a background shot that it's kind of suggested might be the reason why one of the kids disappears. But then they're always throwing out these little tidbits about this. And I think they're partly doing it because it focuses on a group of kids that don't really have the full picture of what's going on themselves. So we're kind of learning about the world and what's really going on as they are. And so far, I thought they did a pretty fascinating job.
That was one of the ones where I was going into it thinking, oh no, based on a sci-fi novel, they're going to do in media res. And I actually thought that one did a really good job of hooking you. Like, if you're gonna play Puzzle Box, I feel like that's a really good example of how to do it well, how to still hook the viewer even though you are confusing them and leaving things really, really vague. But they gave you just enough of a taste of what the world was like, and they established just enough rules where the world building seemed like it was fine to me. Like, I'm fine with that. I don't need it to be 100% spelled out. Just don't be completely confusing. Like, that's where you lose me. But from the New World, I totally agree with you. I thought it was really well done. But yeah, totally based on a famous book. Rebecca, what do you think?
I would agree. I liked the little subtle details in From the New World. I liked the way that they established that we'd sort of gone back to this earlier era while still retaining some measure of technology, without ever actually saying there was some sort of cataclysmic event and now we're using this pit instead of that. So it was the subtlety of the world building that fed into the storytelling, I thought, was very well done. And that's really how I think it should be done.
Okay. All right. We got to wrap up here. So here is our last question. Good one to go out on. I like this one. Cross Maps asks, when giving your opinion and grade for shows in the preview guide, how much weight do you give to your enjoyment of the single episode you watched versus the potential you see for the show down the road? I like that question. Theron, how do you determine that?
That's one that I've actually thought about quite a bit myself, pretty much every time we do one of these preview guides. And what I usually end up doing is assigning the grade primarily on initial gut reaction. And if I think the show's got a different level of potential than what my gut reaction says, then I'll make some comment about it in the preview. But generally speaking, the grade, yeah, it's like if it absolutely catches my attention and fascinates me, but then no matter where I think it's the series might go, I'll give it a high grade. If it just doesn't get my attention at all, then no matter where I think the series might go, I'll give it a low grade.
Yeah. Interesting. Rebecca?
Well, I guess I sort of look at it that way. I mean, for example, I really enjoyed the first episode of Kamisama Kiss, but it didn't strike me as anything special, so I figured that was based more on the fact that I liked the storyline already and that I thought they were doing a good job with the adaptation. That didn't mean that someone who was just coming to it cold would like it. So I try and think like that. I have a very picky middle sister, and I try and think of her as the worst case scenario for anything that I review. So what would Marge think? And I try and use that as sort of a balancing point to my own opinion. But If a show just drags me in and blows me away, and regardless of where I think it's going to go, I will give it a good grade, just because that we are basing it on one episode, and that one episode may have done something so well that it deserves the higher mark.
Yeah, I mean, again, the marks themselves, you know, we use them because we have to. But in the text, I feel like the best kind of a first episode is one that hooks you right away. Or not necessarily just right away, but hooks you, period, and shows potential. Now, I've seen first episodes, I can't name any off the top of my head, but I know I've seen first episodes where I said, that was neat, don't know if it's really going to go anywhere interesting, but, you know, neat first episode. And you clarify that in the text, and that's a different kind of score, versus this wasn't that good, but I could see where it might get more interesting down the road. That's another kind of score, that's another thing. But again, like, you want the hooks you, has a lot of interesting, neat things in it, and shows a lot of potential. You want all of those. But any one of those things can still make for a promising first episode. So, you know, it's varying degrees in there. It's all in how you think about it and how you break it down. The worst is shitty first episode, no promise, isn't going anywhere interesting. Just a bunch of cliches. That's the worst is when it doesn't have any of those elements. But when you're just looking at a first episode, your criteria does change to which of these sort of three things does it have. At least that's kind of how I tend to look at it. It's always tough to figure out the best way to do it. The preview guide is a flawed thing. It's not ideal. Every time we've tried to change the format, though, it's weakened. So what we've got right now, I think, works well enough for what it is, while acknowledging that it's not perfect. But anyway, that wraps it up for us. Thanks to both of you for coming on the shows. It was great talking to both of you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Theron and Rebecca for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check it out at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.